Now, let us look at the maintenance of a breeder seed. So we have looked at the nucleus. Now we are at the first generation. All right. Now we are talking about three generations. Understand that nucleus is not generation one, but it is generation zero. The breeder seed is generation one. So now we have entered the first generation. The breeder stock seed from the nucleus should be again sown on a clean, fertile land, which did not grow a crop of the same kind in the previous year. So again, we are looking at a piece of land which did not have the same type of crop in the previous year. The field should be isolated like we did in the nucleus process. The best farm process or procedures should be used while we are sowing, while we are raising or harvesting the breeder stock. It should be produced at an experiment station and not a commercial land. Again, the idea is to isolate the seeds from the remaining crop. So if you use a common agricultural plot to breed your breeder seeds, it will not result in good quality seeds. Now the seeding should be done in such a way that it makes the best use of the limited amount of seed available, and it should also facilitate roguing. And we have already seen what roguing means. The row spacing between the plants that or the seeds that are sown should be sufficient enough that examination of plants can take place. Roguing, we have seen this in the previous slides, that all plants that are not of a typical variety should be pulled away and removed. For example, if we are maybe sowing the nucleus or the breeder stock of rice, if we find that with the basmati, a kolam is somehow sowed in, the kolam needs to be removed. This is roguing. And roguing should ideally be done before the plant flowers, because that is when you get an idea which is of not the correct variety. Because after that, the plants grow in size and it may not be easy for us to do the roguing. It may affect the plants in the vicinity if you do roguing after that, because the roots kind of gain firm ground. Harvesting the breeder stock is somewhat similar. Here, the equipment should be used. It should be clean. Unlike the earlier portion of nucleus seeds, we are not looking at a completely manual method of harvesting. We can use certain machines or certain mechanisms, but it has to be completely cleaned and sterile. These cleanliness should not only be to the equipments, but also to the label cards or the bags in which the bundle is kept or the seeds are kept. Sometimes a threshing machine is used to take out seeds from the stock. That also needs to be cleaned. Anywhere, if there is an impurity, it will impact the quality of the breeder seeds. Now, the breeder seed is ready and it can now go into being the foundation seed. Again, a portion of the breeder seed is kept by the breeder. So at every stage, be it a nucleus, breeder, foundation, or certificate, a portion of that seed is always maintained by the source, just to ensure that if it is required or if tomorrow we need the same type of seeds to go out again, we have a ready stock. Now, the maintenance of breeder seeds of certain established varieties, there are certain qualities that you need to look at. Now, how do you establish the varieties that needs to be maintained? One is by doing a bulk selection. So you select in bulk and you ensure that the quality remains the same, or you raise the crop in isolation. Now, the breeder must carry enough seeds to safeguard against, say, potential loss of variety if there is a complete failure. It can also, the portion of seed should also be stored under ideal conditions. We cannot just store seeds in a bag and keep it somewhere, in a storage unit. It has to be in an ideal condition, which is sterile, controlled atmospheric conditions, regulated heat and temperature control, moisture control. All of these needs to be taken care of. Now, the breeder seed is the progeny of the nucleus seed of a particular variety. All right. It is produced by the originating breeder, or say a sponsored breeder. Now, the breeder seed production is the mandate of the ICAR. So it is a mandatory requirement in the seed production process. Now let us look at the second generation, which is called the foundation seed. Foundation seed is again the progeny of the breeder seed of a particular variety of plant or a crop. It is required to be produced from the breeder seed or from the foundation seed, which can be clearly traced to the breeder seed. For example, in terms of breeder seeds, if we were looking at the second generation, which is the breeder seed stock is kept with the breeder so that it can be traced back to the nucleus. Similarly, the foundation seed should be ideally traced back to the breeder seed. Because if there is any anomaly, if there is any difference or variance in the entire process, it can be traced back to the origin and necessary action can be taken. Now, foundation seed is again required to meet certain standards of seed certification. The responsibility of production of the foundation seed is being entrusted to various authorities like the NSC or the SFCI, the state departments of the agricultural industry, or sometimes even private seed producers. Now, foundation seeds are generally produced on government lands, experiment stations, or even at agricultural universities. Now, the difference from generation 0 and 1 that we see here is that it is not only at experiment stations, but there are other locations where foundation seeds can also be produced. Now, the foundation seeds has to fulfill certain quality parameters, and they are very rigid in nature. One is the minimum pure seed. So how much pure is the seed in the entire lot? The inert matter, is it maximum or minimum? The moisture content should ideally remain minimum. Too much moisture content, again, like I said, it results in decomposition, and too less is too dry to germinate. And the minimum germination criteria. So if I have 200 seeds, I need to have at least 180 seeds germinating out of it. This is a hypothetical example. Now, foundation seed crops are basically subjected to a lot of inspections on field for the creation of certified seeds. Now, the standards for isolation, distance, and field inspection are more stringent in case of foundation seeds in comparison to certified seeds. So we looked at nucleus, which was stringent, which was very stringent. Then we came down to breeders, slightly relaxed. Foundation, relaxed from the breeder stock, but much more stringent in comparison to the certified seeds. The state seed certification agency carries out field inspections and seed tests on the foundation seeds. The last and the final generation, or the third generation in the Indian seed production process, is the certified seeds. So we have already looked at the nucleus, which gave rise to the breeders. The breeders gave rise to the foundation, and the foundation is now uncertified. Now, obviously, like we have already know, that the certified seeds come from the foundation seeds of a particular variety. Again, there are certain standards and parameters that needs to be maintained if a seed, certified seed, needs to go ahead with approval. The Indian Minimum Seed Certification Standards of 1998 govern these parameters and ensure that the certified seeds come out of the topmost quality. The production and distribution of certified seeds is the responsibility of the state government through various agricultural divisions and departments that the government operates in various states. Certified seeds are distributed to farmers. The production is organized through SSC, Department of Agricultural Farms and Cooperatives. Again, like we have seen in the previous types or the previous generations of the seeds, the number of authorities involved in the process were limited. the production was limited to a specific area. When it came to foundation, we looked at there were 3 or 4 different options where the foundation seed could be produced. But now when we are looking at the certified seed production system, the production can be organized in various locations under the supervision of various government or semi-government authorities. Now, the efforts of the state government is being supplemented by organizations like NSC and SFCI, which produces varieties, and these varieties are of national importance to us. For example, there are certain crops which are predominantly used for exports. If these varieties are not maintained in the agricultural segment in the market, it will result in a lot of monetary loss for the country as a whole. And hence, these organizations are supporting the state government to ensure that the various varieties of crops that are produced in the state, or rather the country, is maintained, and the product varieties also have some form of genetic purity in it. Now, the requirement of certified seeds is assessed by the state government on various parameters on the basis that the area sown under different crop varieties should be specific. The area covered by hybrid and self-pollinated varieties should also be specifically segregated and known. And the seed replacement rate should be achieved. So every time the seed replacement rate should not be too high or too low, it has to be optimum. Now, requirement, again, let us look at a few requirements for certified seeds. Obviously, genetic purity, physical purity, that is the size, shape, structure, weight of every seed needs to be maintained and almost close to standard. The germination should be perfect, ideal, optimum, or at least near perfect. There should be no weeds. Even the weed seeds should not be present in the normal certified seed stock. It should have freedom from diseases, and it should have an optimum moisture content. So these are few requirements that certified seeds have before they finally get out into the market for further propagation. Understand that these are not the only requirements. There are many more, but these are the major requirements of certified seeds. Now, let us now look at biotechnology and what role has biotechnology played in terms of seed production. Now, biotechnology has been an emerging area, and it has been an area which has impacted agriculture to a very great extent through its technological advancements. There are several innovative achievements in the field of life sciences that biotechnology has created, or rather it has ensured, and it has affected every aspect of human life. Advancements in genetics, biochemistry, molecular biology, cell biology, all of this have allowed us to develop the genetic engineering segment of biotechnology to a very great extent. In agriculture, biotechnology plays a very significant role. It gives us the ability to genetically transform a wide variety of crop species, and it can enhance the various attributes of every crop species. It also has the capacity of generating variability inside the crop. Most major crops which are genetically produced are corn, wheat, rice, potato, sunflower, oil seeds, rape seeds. All of these are produced using agricultural biotechnology. Plant tissue culture also forms a part of this. Now, plant tissue culture is actually a very wide term which has everything from a protoplast or a cell tissue or organ cultures. All of this comes under a very controlled environment, or rather an artificial nutrient medium is given in a very controlled environment through which a plant is propagated. Now, micropropagation or tissue culture multiplication has developed into a very preferred method of cloning and bulking of elite plant materials. So if there are specific plants that fall under a very high net worth segment, tissue culture is used for micropropagation so that the controlled atmosphere maintains the genetic and varietal purity, and it also gives some form of immunity to the plant to fight various diseases and ensure maximum crop output. Faster clonal propagation is currently being commercialized in the country for specifically for a lot of horticultural species like bananas or oil palms and rose carnations and etc. Now, this kind of propagation is required specifically for certain, cash-rich products, especially orchids and rose carnations are too much in demand, and sometimes these are also exported to various countries. In this technique, the plants are regenerated through a sequence of side branch or adventitious shoot formation using various tissues as explants. So the tissues can come from your bark, your stem, your root, the leaf. All of these portions of the plant may or may not give rise to a new plant. And like we saw in the previous lecture, this portion or this tissue that is removed from the mother plant is called an explant. Now, micropropagation techniques are useful in increasing the propagates of a new sexual or somatic hybrid or a plant freed from pathogens, or in case it can also help us to kind of genetically engineer a plant to give it attributes that are generally not seen naturally across various varieties of plants. If the embryos formed by such means are enclosed in a skin-like conventional seeds or encapsulation is done, it is suitable for developing artificial seeds. For example, if we are looking at a kind of asexual methodology of tissue culture from which we generate artificial embryos and it is encased or encapsulated, it gives right to artificial seeds. Special delivery systems like fluid drilling will also help in developing and perfecting this particular method. There is a lot of technological advancement that has come into this field, and a lot of such activities that you see here, that or rather what you're hearing now, is conducted under a very controlled laboratory atmosphere. Now, like what we saw in the previous steps, this results into something called somatic embryogenesis. So an embryo is generated in a laboratory atmosphere. This is called a somatic embryogenesis, and it is useful in annual field crops or perennial trees. Perennial trees are something that have fruits giving out every year, throughout the year rather. Now, seeds are formed in this case by fusion of the female ovule and the male pollen, each containing half of the genetic material that is required for creation of the perfect embryo. This again is a completely laboratory-based process, and it happens at a very micro level. So it is not something that we can observe in front of our eyes, but it does happen at a micro level, and it happens in a very controlled atmosphere where everything, including the nutrition that is going into this embryo, is controlled by the laboratory attendants, or rather the people who are working on it. Genetic engineering, the result of the advancements or the role of biotechnology, is genetic engineering and the various genetically modified crops. We may have heard about the GM cotton or the genetically modified cotton, which at one point in time had created a lot of controversy in this country because people were not sure whether they should go for a GM cotton or a normal cotton. Let's look at how these genetically modified crops are actually impacting our agricultural sector. Now, the plants that are developed by using genetic engineering technology are basically known as transgenic plants and are now available for various crops like, say, cotton, there is maize, there is soybean and tomato. So these four crops currently are available in a genetically modified form. Biotechnological approaches towards these crops are successful for basically a dicotyledonous crops, all right? Rather, if we look at crops which are like wheat or rice, genetic modification or biotechnological advancements, or rather genetic engineering, does not have a high success rate. So if the crop is dichotomous, if the seed has two parts, the genetic engineering in that section works much, much better. Now, other successful results, if we have to look at in terms of genetic engineering or genetically modified crops, there is something called Bollard cotton or new leaf potatoes with BT gene. There is a soybean with herbicidal resistance. So sometimes what we do is we use herbicides on the field to fight a weed problem, but it may actually affect the crop. And in this case, you want to ensure that the crop has a resistance to the herbicide and it does not react to it. So in this case, you can actually genetically engineer the crop of soybean to ensure that the herbicides do not impact it. There have also been various varieties of tomatoes or cotton that is genetically modified so that it does not get affected by locusts or certain specific small insects that impact the crop generation. Now, modern microbiological tools are increasingly being used. Okay? There are many genetically modified products that are coming up with very much novel traits. For example, like I said, if there are certain crops which are repelling insects which was otherwise attracting them, there are genetic modifications in crops done which are ensuring that they have better yield. Genetic modifications are done to ensure that the size of the crop increases, the yield increases in terms of not of just number but size and variety and color. There are so many things that are happening, and all of this has happened because of genetic engineering or genetic modification through biotechnological advancements. Now, how impactful has genetic engineering or GM crops been? It is pretty much impactful as it gives a lot of multiple attributes to the crops. So, like I said, there is an insect resistance, there is a herbicide tolerance, there is disease resistance, quality improvement. All of this comes from a recombinant DNA technology that is used in the biotechnological advancements, specifically in terms of agricultural biotechnology. Now, the first and probably the only GM crop approved for cultivation in India is the BT cotton. The GM tomato is not commercially produced in India. It is still not approved by the government. There are certain environmental concerns that are arising from the release of such transgenic crops, and it needs to be evaluated on a case-to-case basis. Like I said, when the GM cotton was introduced in the Indian market, there was a lot of controversy around it, whether it will be the right kind of move for us. There were some opinions that we were playing with nature. There were some who were of the opinion that these crops may start showing some form of adverse behaviors or adverse reactions in future. For now, we have not seen any such major issues or any such major conditions since BT cotton has been in India for quite some time now, almost more than a decade. But however, there have been instances where these crops have failed or these crops have given out certain unwanted attributes or unwelcome characteristics. So such cases are being dealt with on an individual basis and it is not generalized all over. The relevance of producing GM crops for addressing the food security situation in developing countries like India is lying in the potential, which the technology holds. We as a country still have several pockets in our country where food is an issue. People do not get adequate nutrition. Agricultural crops are failing miserably. Every year we have listened to farmers in specific pockets of the country like Telangana and Maharashtra and several other states where farmers are either committing suicides or they are migrating to cities, leaving their agricultural land because their crops have failed. There is a possibility that a genetically modified crop may help them in this situation. And hence, advancements in this field will definitely impact or probably give a positive impact to the food security issue that we are facing today. And it may pave way to a lot more advancements in future. Thank you so much.